Where do you need me to?
Can I move right here?
Got everything ready, Dan? Okay.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to the September 4th City Council meeting. Would you please call the roll, Carla?
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Britz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Hales?
Here. One item on the agenda. Would you read that, please?
Item 845. Yeah, my mic's not working.
Even Carla gets defeated by this sound system occasionally.
Test. Sorry, working here. I'll talk real loud. Amend Portland fire regulations to extend the protection afforded by automatic fire sprinklers to occupants of existing buildings used as nightclubs that are not protected with an automatic fire sprinkler system.
Thank you, Mayor, and members of the council. I appreciate the opportunity to bring this important ordinance before you today for its public hearing, or first reading. What I'm proposing is relatively straightforward and simple. This ordinance will amend Portland's fire code to require fire suppression sprinklers at all nightclubs. Right now, the situation is if you were to open a new nightclub today, you would be required to install fire suppression sprinklers. But if you had a nightclub that has been open prior to 2007, I believe that's the year, there is no requirement for sprinkling an existing nightclub. And to me, this is something that is a loophole. This is really a classic example of a loophole that needs to be fixed. It's wrongheaded, and this is an opportunity for us to do this. And we can be preventative about this by enacting this ordinance next week. And if we don't act preventative, I'm convinced one day we're going to convene as a city council after a tragedy has occurred, and we'll do the same thing that I'm proposing we do next week. So I hope we can do it now and hopefully save some lives. The ordinance does recognize the economic impact this will have on the property owners and potentially their tenants. And by recognizing that, it does allow up to 20 months for many of these buildings to install fire sprinkler systems. And we're truly talking about nightclubs here, not every bar or restaurant in Portland. The definitions of nightclub is specific and is listed in the ordinance. And to date, our fire marshal, Nate Takara, who is here, has identified no more than 20 properties that would be impacted by this regulation. Portland Fire and Rescue Chief Aaron Jansons and Fire Marshal Nate Takara will walk us through the details. And of course, we're here to answer any questions you may have or any information requests you need between now and when we take a vote on this ordinance. As I said at the outset, this is a first reading, so we'll have some intervening time over the next week if any member of council has questions or if any members of the public have questions they want to have asked that we will respond to. And with that, I'll turn it over to Chief Jansons.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members of council, for the record, Aaron Jansons, Fire Chief, Portland Fire and Rescue. I have with me Fire Marshal Nate Takara, and we're here today to talk to you about protecting people in nightclubs with automatic fire sprinklers. We have a very brief PowerPoint presentation with three different slide presentation or video clips in them. The entire presentation will take approximately 8 to 9 minutes, but I hope that it will clarify and make it more clear for the audience to follow along with us. So for the purpose of the Portland Fire Code, the official definition we're proposing for nightclub will be an A2 occupancy. Sorry about that. Technical difficulties on my part. Sorry, that was an error. The official definition we're proposing for a nightclub will be an A2 occupancy under the 2009 International Building Code, which A, has areas for dancing or viewing performers, and B, serves food or drink.
Chief, the Commissioner Saltzman said there are about 20 properties that are impacted. Are you going to give us, in your PowerPoint, the names of some just so we get a flavor?
I don't believe we brought those. Those are not in the PowerPoint.
I'll come back to that.
Yeah. If I could also just ask a clarifying question. Does the 2009 International Building Code include the releases, the exemptions on nightclub does not include houses of worship Or is
This is what we're proposing. And so the houses of worship, theaters with fixed seating, banquet halls, lodge halls, those are excluded from this definition that we're proposing.
And what's the reason for that?
Given the scenario of a nightclub, people are generally fixed on a particular, they're focused on a particular thing. They're generally distracted. There's usually a lot going on, and we have very specific instances of this occurring and fire fatalities resulting from those. And if you give me a few minutes, I'll get into some of those specifics, okay? So as Commissioner Salzman stated, current building or fire codes require that newly constructed nightclubs or buildings with a change in use to become a nightclub in an existing building have automatic fire sprinkler systems installed when any of the following conditions exist. And that's an occupant load of 100 or more, the fire area exceeds 5,000 square feet, or the fire area is located on a floor other than the level where the people actually exit the building. Because fire sprinklers save lives, we believe that all nightclubs meeting these criteria be required to have automatic sprinkler systems. Fire in the Coconut Grove in 1942 remains the deadliest fire, nightclub fire in history, resulting in 492 deaths. The Station nightclub fire in Warwick, Rhode Island, 100 people died. Many of you may recall that instance. And I'm going to try and show a brief video, of that fire. And for anybody who's a little squeamish, this can get, can show you the intensity. This is a short clip. The actual clip is about 10 or 11 minutes. We've got about a minute and a half just of the earliest phases. So this is a obviously a nightclub performance. You can see the smoke. The fire is now started. Smoke is starting to, there's actual fire up there. Some of the audience is not quite sure. Now they're starting to realize this is not part of the performance. Confusion starting to set in. We're at 30 seconds right now. This happens very, very quickly. The fire spreads exponentially. Obviously, with a nightclub setting, without the fixed seating, the people are crammed in this space. They're all trying to exit. We're at 1 minute now. People are pushing, they're experiencing the smoke. The fire has spread exponentially now at this point. People are getting burned who are closer near the fire. It's rather gray, but you can see all the dark billowing smoke coming out of the exit. And that is a very, very tragic incident. I apologize for the graphics, but kind of drives the point home of the severity of what can happen and what does happen. Just this year, 233 people were killed in April in a nightclub fire in Santa Maria, Brazil. I'm sure everybody recalls that. In the past 10 years, 757 people have lost their lives in nightclub fires that were unsprinklered. In the past 40 years, there have been nearly 2,000. There's an informational packet that was handed out to all of the council members. There were 20 nightclub fires listed in those. Nearly 2,500 people have died in nightclub fires in unsprinklered occupancies. Seven out of those 20 fires were in the United States, resulting in nearly 1,000 deaths, or over 40% of the total deaths that we're talking about here today. We have a slide here with presented by the National Institute of Standards and Technology, they actually recreated the station nightclub fire. So we can avoid the gruesome details in here, but you can actually see the fire growing and how it quickly goes from the incipient phase to the free burning phase of the fire. You can see how this quickly happens, and within 30 seconds we have a fire creating a lot of toxic smoke and free burning and then spreading exponentially. You can see at this point you're getting a layer of smoke and heated gases up at the ceiling. And those are quickly building and starting to bank down. It happens very quickly. Just probably 20 seconds ago, it was a very, very thin layer at the ceiling, and now it's moving down very, very quickly. You can see with movement of people in there moving, causing air movement, how that smoke will then get brought down to the level that people are trying to breathe at very, very quickly. And now that's rolling, and at any point that area will flash over because of all those products of combustion in that fire. So within a minute and a half, without any real air movement of things moving around, that fire has just very quickly banked down all the way down to the floor level.
Chief, is the cause of death for most people the smoke, inhalation, the fire itself, or is it the panic that sets in and crowds kind of collapsing on each other, or some combination?
Great question. It's actually generally, most typically it would be the smoke that will get people first. In the station nightclub fire, or where you have areas where people are packed in there very tightly, people initially got piled up within the exit ways. Those exit ways became clogged and congested, and they just were packed in. And so people were not able to exit. They were just literally stacked like wood. And so the products of combustion, the closer you were to the fire, people were actually burned. And actually throughout that entire nightclub, people burned. But first they suffered from being trampled to death and smoke inhalation, and then ultimately the fire.
So from your point of view, you'd want not only a sprinkler system to prevent these tragic deaths, mm-hmm. but also people to observe occupancy limits.
Absolutely.
And to have good egress and ingress.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm going to show you the same scenario, however it's set up with an automatic sprinkler system. So this is actually a great example or a great opportunity to talk about. We actually had a fire in a very popular restaurant in the Pearl District this spring or early summer. It was a weeknight. People were there to enjoy dinner, and there was a fire in the bar area started between some alcohol and a candle. And fortunately, there was an automatic fire sprinkler system, and that fire sprinkler was activated and very quickly put out the fire, much like what you're seeing right here today.
Sprinklers are going now?
The sprinklers are going right now, and they're extinguishing that fire.
Yeah, and there's still fire on the ceiling because mm-hmm. the sprinklers are aiming down, but the amount of smoke is a lot less.
Yeah, and the cooling effect from the sprinklers will help extinguish some of the other fire. So you can see within a very short time, this still has a possibility that people, while there's light smoke, or, you know, actually it's moderately heavy smoke, people can still exit this area and survive.
What started that fire? Station
nightclub fire? It was actually pyrotechnics that went awry. So you can see they make a tremendous difference. So according to the National Fire Protection Agency, or Association, I'm sorry, there's no record of more than two people dying in a fire when the building was completely protected with an automatic sprinkler system and properly maintained in the U.S., which is a significant statistic. At this point, I'm going to hand it over to Fire Marshal Nate Takara to discuss the specifics, but we'll hope that you'll support this important improvement. It's all about protecting people, avoiding a preventable tragedy, and making our city a safer place. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Nate Takara, Fire Marshal for Portland Fire and Rescue.
Can we get the lights?
You don't have any more slides, do you, Nate?
We've got a few more.
Oh, okay.
Can we also turn the volume up a bit? Maybe I'm losing my hearing, but that's thanks.
Okay.
Anyhow, this is Chief Johnson's and Commissioner Sossman spoke about earlier. As far as the businesses that the nightclubs that be impacted are nightclubs in the city of Portland with occupant load greater than 100 will be mandated to be protected with an automatic fire sprinkler system. Again, I just want to reiterate the fact that nightclubs does not include houses of worship, theaters with fixed seatings, banquet halls, or dance halls. Using this definition as the focus, we come to realize that there's approximately 15 businesses or nightclubs that would be impacted by this ordinance. The installation process of the fire sprinkler system, which includes design, permitting, installation, and inspections, will probably take about 5 to 6 months to be completed. With that in mind, we created two phases. Any nightclubs with an occupant load greater than 200 will have until December 31st, 2014 to be in compliance. Smaller nightclubs with an occupant load with a minimum of 101 until with a max of 199 will have until June 30th, 2015 to be in compliance. Portland Fire and Rescue is committed to working with each and every nightclub that is being affected by this ordinance for them to install something that's economically feasible automatic fire sprinkler system that serves the basic life safety requirements. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak on this ordinance, and we hope that you would support it. I'm here to answer any other questions that you may have.
Thank you.
Further questions, Chief?
I have a question, if I could. Chief, first of all, thank you for a very succinct presentation. I don't know how you got the PowerPoint to work so effectively.
Yeah.
You actually got a PowerPoint, and then you embedded a film, so you were, like, showing off a little bit.
I have to give someone else credit for that. I didn't do that, but thank you.
What's the legal liability of the property owner today if there's a fire and they don't have a sprinkler system? Are they liable for any injuries that happen, or do in buildings that don't have sprinklers, do patrons assume the risk?
You know, that may be a good question for Ellen Osenak to speak to, given that I'm not an attorney.
The reason I ask is I'm just thinking about what kind of notice we give to patrons. For example, in facilities that don't have this, should we be considering having a system that says there are no sprinklers? In other words, if people are assuming the risk, or is the liability already on the property owner?
One of my concerns is I don't know if people really understand the risk. I think it's
no, but what they often confront when they come into a club or they see on the back of their ticket, it sort of suggests that the patron assumes a certain risk, like when you go to a ballpark or things. And I'm just curious, do you know offhand, is the owner of the building liable for the foreseeable consequences of not having sprinklers?
Off the record, Ellen Osenak from the City Attorney's Office. I think that's an excellent question, Commissioner Fish. I don't think there's a clear answer to that, but if I was a property owner, given the state of Oregon's tort law, I would certainly be concerned that my failure to sprinkle my building could subject me to liability because it's certainly a foreseeable consequence.
And it's not an unreasonable expense to address, because as the data shows, as Dan's fact sheet shows you can get a 100% mitigation in terms of deaths with this technology.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is a direct correlation between sprinklers and saving lives.
Excellent point.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Questions?
So I have a few. In the terms of the definition of a nightclub, if you have one performance a year, are you a nightclub?
You know, that would be an generally be a building that is a non-assembly type occupancy, and they're getting a special permit to hold an assembly type event. So generally, I would say no.
So how many times a week or a month do you have to have performances before you need a more general occupancy use?
I think it'll determine the use with the building department. When you apply for an application at the building department, your application would determine if there's a dance floor or a stage, and a setup that it's determined when you apply for your use at the building department. The building department determines the use. We enforce compliance.
Okay, and I'm not clear why you're exempting places that have alcohol served, but also have seating. If you would, you know, think about a similar pyrotechnic display going wrong, I would think that it might be even more difficult for people to get out if there were seats in the way.
So the difference between fixed seatings and spaces where in the typical nightclub center you saw in the video as intensity of the use. It's how the building department determines how many people can be in the building. In fixed seatings, each person has a seat to sit on, and your aisles, your exit width, is determined the amount of seats you have in there. When you have a nightclub setting with the open dance floors, the seating arrangement, the occupant load is almost double than the seating arrangements, so you really have intensified use in the space.
And what if an establishment has a mixture of fixed seating and open dancing? Would they be subject or no?
If the occupant load is greater than 100.
Okay. And I'm wondering why it says to sprinkle the floors below the story containing the nightclub, but not the ones above.
Well, fire usually goes up.
Right.
So
wouldn't you sprinkle the ones above rather than the ones below?
No, the ones below, because that's your exit path to get out of the building. Normally, you go down.
You want to protect the exit way. So if the nightclub is, say, on the third floor, you want to ensure that the occupants are going to be able to exit from the third to the second to the first and out the building.
But in the illustration we just saw, the ceiling was still on fire because the sprinklers were going down, as the mayor pointed out. So wouldn't you want to sprinkle at least the floor above?
So you're presuming that the floor above is occupied.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a good point. And
how we came about the requirements is basically getting out of the current fire code, which talks about when you have an assembly space. What they're really concerned about is if you looked at the station nightclub fire, the fire was going. I understand your point where it's on the ceiling, but there's separation between the second and third floor. What they're concerned about is if the fire, if your nightclub's on the second floor, fire starts on the first floor, that'll spread to your and block your exits, your way to get out of the building. So they want to control the fire at the level, the floor of exit discharge, which is the ground level.
That might be something to look at before next week as to whether, in some instances, if the ceiling, which is the floor right above it, is on fire, you would want that level to be sprinklered if there were uses above.
It might, Commissioner, be worth looking at the list in that. I mean, you raise a valid policy question, which I would probably answer in favor of the current version, in that we're talking about protecting life, not property. I mean, protecting property is a good idea, but protecting life is a higher mm-hmm. value. But aside from these philosophical arguments, it may be that we look at the list of buildings and there are very few of them that are three stories.
Well,
I think a lot of them are one- and two-story buildings.
And I don't have that list, so if I could get that would be
okay.
Helpful.
Also, the fire is going to be separated by that floor. So even though the ceiling is catching fire, there's going to be separation between the rafter space and the actual floor of the other occupancy, so that should buy a considerable amount of time.
Chief, could I follow up
on
this
for
a second?
And so there won't be a smoky environment? Yeah.
And we'll take a look at the list of what's covered. But as I read the definition, this would cover nightclubs that serve minors where no alcohol is served. So the downtown clubs where kids mm-hmm. can go and they're allowed, that is under 21 mm-hmm. because there's no alcohol served. That would be covered provided they serve food.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd get venues for adults and young people.
That's correct.
Under this definition.
Based on the occupancy load, right?
And Chief, when you and Commissioner Saltzman were working this up, do you have any related concerns about whether nightclubs downtown are observing other codes that you enforce, like things like occupancy? It seems to me, as well-intentioned as this is, if there were other code enforcement issues, it could still make your job complicated.
Sure. You know, we go out and do nighttime inspections on a regular basis, and we really work with the bar owners or the club owners and ensure that those codes are being met. So that's regularly and consistently enforced.
Thank you.
And why did you go with the 5,000 square foot threshold?
That's a current build, fire code. So if, what you're reading there, the 5,000 square feet threshold, the 100 occupant load, and the assembly space that's above or below the exit discharge, that's current code.
For what constitutes an A2 occupancy, you mean?
No, for what an A2 occupancy in today's code. If you were to open up a new bar today or a new nightclub today, that's a provision.
And under the proposal, you don't specify.
No, we just speak. Okay. We just focus on the occupant load.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions from the chief, from the fire marshal? And then testimony. I think we have some folks signed up.
Yes.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
We have four people signed up. The first three, please come on up, are Jim Atwood, Crystal Alinsky, and Gary J. Honnold.
Yeah. I'm also going down.
Good afternoon.
Hi. I'm Jim Atwood, 33 Southwest 3rd, Portland, 97204. I'm here this afternoon, not to say whether you should or shouldn't have the building sprinkled, but I did receive two letters regarding this afternoon's hearing, and so apparently I may own two of the 20 buildings that are going to be affected. I think what's significant to me is the number of people who aren't here this afternoon. This letter that I received is very innocuous. It doesn't say anywhere in it that we're going to require sprinklers or try to extend sprinklers to so-called grandfathered buildings. It says Portland Fire and Rescue has identified your building because it may be affected by an upcoming sprinkler ordinance. I don't think the nightclub or property owners really are aware of what's being proposed, and so I would like to encourage you. I don't know if I was sent these notices as a landlord. I rent my buildings as is to my tenants, so it's up to them to maintain the buildings and to comply with the appropriate codes. And I think that these fire sprinkler systems can be very expensive, on the order of maybe $50,000. It's pretty innocuous in the letter here. It talks about $3 or $4 per square foot of coverage, but I don't think that includes a backflow assembly or connection to the city's water supply. I would suggest that if this is something that you're going to more or less mandate among existing nightclub or property owners, that the city should, at a minimum, consider waiving connection fees to connect these required fire lines to the city water supply. And also, it would seem to me, my tenants, as far as I know, don't know anything about this hearing this afternoon. So I think it would be judicious to at least get a list of all the 20 buildings, make sure that those 20 occupants are notified of the proposal and have an opportunity to get bids and find out exactly what it would cost to sprinkle those businesses and come back and give you that information so that you're able to make an informed decision from the business or property owner's point of view. At this point, you know, I Don't know what skin I have in the game because I've rented my buildings as is, but I don't think my tenants are aware that this requirement may be on the horizon. And I would think it would be appropriate to give them a couple of months to get some bids and give you some real hard data as to what kind of hardships are going to be required on the other side of this coin.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, commissioners in attendance. For the record, my name is Gary J. Honnold. I'm the regional director for the National Fire Protection Association's Northwest Field Office. A little bit about NFPA. We are an international nonprofit organization whose mission is to reduce the worldwide burden of fire and other hazards on the quality of life by providing and advocating consensus codes and standards, research, training, and education. We began almost 120 years ago when a dedicated group of citizens wanted to bring proven scientific methodology and consistency in electrical and fire sprinkler installation. Today, NFPA is responsible for over 300 codes and standards that are designed to minimize the risk and effects of fire by establishing criteria for building, processing, design, service, and installation. Our code development process is accredited by the American National Standards Institute and is a fully open process. We have over 200 technical committees working on every one of those documents, with over 7,000 volunteers made up of various stakeholders representing industry, the trades, scientific research, and code enforcement professionals, just to name a few. The technical committees are balanced so that no one stakeholder group can dominate the code development process. And once a draft or one of our documents is completed by the technical committee, it is open for review and input by anyone in the public, whether they're an NFPA member or not. This provides for a truly open consensus-based process. NFPA obviously recognizes the importance and value of automatic fire sprinklers, and we are constantly reviewing and evolving our standard for fire sprinklers, which is NFPA 13, to address new technologies, building methods, and the processes going on inside of those structures. The ordinance before you has outlined the historical importance of providing automatic fire sprinklers and assembly occupancies, and I don't want to waste your time because it is outlined very well in the PowerPoint that Chief Johnson and Fire Marshal Takara did really kind of underscored the importance of that. But the unique circumstances of low lighting, loud ambient noise, large groups of people unfamiliar with the layout of the building, and then, of course, alcohol consumption, et cetera, creates challenges in providing for the safety and well-being of the citizens patronizing these establishments. Installation of automatic fire sprinklers in these type of buildings has proven to contain or extinguish the fire in its initial stages and therefore providing life safety to the people occupying that building. I urge the Portland City Council to pass this ordinance and require installation of automatic fire sprinklers in these establishments. You will be providing for the life safety and property preservation for the business owners, employees, and patrons of your city. Thank you for your time, and I entertain any questions.
Thank you. Appreciate you being here today. Any questions? Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
We have Crystal Ilinski and Suzanne Mayer.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mayor, commissioners, my name is Crystal Ilinski. Let's see. So I think this is a very good step. I'm surprised that we're actually outlining this. I figured that the policies and the code enforcement was already in place, especially with all the threats from Randy Leonard and the Greek Taverna. I thought no one would cross that again. So it was a bit, I was surprised that some businesses were claiming that it was a hassle. And I think I read in a paper that maybe that you were all planning on giving some sort of a help to them. I don't know what that would look like, but I've seen help given to Merritt Paulson. And the special session for Nike. But these are small businesses they tend to be, and they need to be informed, as the gentleman earlier was stating, and have some experience in small business with tight space. And I was just wondering why this hadn't been done before. There's a couple issues that I don't really have that much faith in also. Here it says that the Portland Fire Marshal's office is able to see these projects from start to finish. I was wondering why why it is that we would have one of these agencies that does a really good job at that, and then like PHC Northwest complaining about the bio waste disposal of hypothermic needles in our parks. I would have thought that that would have been something dealt with. So if this is a good agency, I would like to see that done in other agencies. So I'm not really sure what that looks like when they say they can do it from start to finish. The other thing is new buildings. I was wondering why we had those issues with the recent fire on MLK, which at first the media was saying that it wasn't built properly. It had a faulty fire sprinkler system. But again, this was something that was built in conjunction with the city, just like the one I remember at Interstate Firehouse, the new building there for also some of his low-income housing. And I remember that was built faulty. And I just wonder, I'm going to start paying more attention because I pay attention for disability compliance. But just now, I was this morning I would have been here to speak to you, but I was being tortured in the federal building in their bottom floor bunker. And I noticed their ceilings because they have horrible fluorescent lights. And I told them, I'm about to have a seizure. I don't know why you're interrogating me and torturing me. But now that I think about it, I didn't see any sprinklers in there. So I'm just wondering where in the city the sprinklers are. And I need help right now. I'm about to go to my doctor. But I hope that talking to Ron Wyden, we can deal with our neighbors across the way. Don't cross that park. You will be tortured. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for considering this proposal. I'm Suzanne Mayer. I'm with the Columbia Willamette, the local chapter of the National Fire Sprinkler Association. And Ms. Zielinski, the fire sprinklers are right there. There's concealed heads right above the council chambers here.
Sometimes they're hard to see.
Yeah, they are.
This is in a federal building. Yeah. I guess we don't have any say over federal buildings.
I think you'll find that they have those too.
I feel yeah. Not in the downstairs bunker.
Okay.
So concrete, no windows.
All right, we'll check.
Pretty scary.
We'll check.
Just a little bit about the National Fire Sprinkler Association and our local chapter. We're made up of fire sprinkler contractors. And we provide technical assistance, and our members maintain a code of ethics and level of professionalism. And in the Portland area, there's at least a dozen of our NFSA members and quite a few other contractors. I'd just like to talk a little bit about some of the cost mitigation that always at the heart of any fire sprinkler discussion about adding it as another requirement for businesses. There's a cost issue. And we've seen the costs that Nate pulled together of the 3 to 4 square foot for just the sprinkler system. There's also the hookup fees. And as Mr. Atwood suggested, I would really encourage a dialogue to talk about ways to mitigate that. There's two things that the National Fire Sprinkler Association is doing to help small businesses mitigate the cost of installing retrofitting fire sprinklers. And one of those, we're working with Congress to be able to depreciate the cost of your fire sprinkler system. Currently, it's a 39-year depreciation schedule, and we'd like to see that moved up, and particularly for small businesses to be able to get some immediate tax relief, and that would be one helpful piece. The other thing NFSA is doing is partnering with the Insurance Services Office to make sure that buildings that do have, commercial buildings that do have fire sprinklers are getting the credit. And also that the ISO recognizes that Portland has progressive fire codes. And that helps keep the insurance rating for the community lower. So those are some things we're doing to recognize the cost impact that it'll have on businesses.
May I just comment on that? And thank you for your testimony, Mayor, if I may. I have the honor of being the Water Bureau Commissioner. Mm-hmm. And there is no current conversation about waivers or discounts involving the Water Bureau, but I would be remiss if I didn't put it in a larger context. Mm-hmm. The city is currently being sued by the same group that is behind a water district, and one of their claims is that discounts that we provide, SDC waivers, low-income discounts, are not authorized under our charter. And that may come as a surprise to people. It certainly comes as a surprise to our lawyers. But there is a dispute about whether we can do these things. We have a view a plaintiff has a different view. There is no current conversation about discounts or waivers, but I will tell you that this issue has become very politicized, and you should know that even were we to entertain it, the likelihood is if we did so, we would be sued for violating our charter. Now, we would disagree with that holding, but that is a typical claim that we are currently defending in a lawsuit against the city. So I just want to put that in context. I appreciate the fact that Commissioner Saltzman has put in a timeline here for compliance, which gives people time to figure out how to do it and how to get convention, if necessary, how to get financing for it. Mm-hmm. And presumably, a property owner or a lessor in good standing can go to a bank or find some other way to finance this. The city's not going to be in a position now to offer that financing, but I think the timeline that he's suggesting, and I'm sure he's going to be criticized for giving this much time. I mean, that's the next thing that will happen. He'll be criticized for even having a transition period. But the fact that there is a transition period seems to me gives people time to figure out what's the cost and how to finance it. When you look at this data, though, and you see that the absence of this sprinkler system is going to cost lives, I think it's pretty clear mm-hmm. where this council's headed. But anyway, thank you for your testimony.
And just along those notes, as a mother of two 20-somethings who like to go to music venues, they're not thinking of fire sprinklers. I call them and remind them to look up, but that's not top of their. It's who the band is and how much fun they're going to have. And I think that's something we all need to keep in mind, that we're providing a level of protection to people who just aren't there to think about their safety for the night. So just make sure I covered everything. Oh, just two quick things. I always feel compelled to address the fire sprinkler myths because, just so you know, fire sprinklers are only heat activated. Smoke does not make them activate. So in the videos that you saw, it was when the level of heat intensity is what made the sprinklers go off. And then the other myth is that usually only the fire sprinkler closest to the fire will activate. And so just two things to keep in mind when you're considering those for your own buildings.
So let me ask your opinion as a mother and also somebody who's familiar with sprinklers. Are you comfortable with the exemptions for houses of worship, theaters with fixed seating, banquet halls, and lodge halls?
Well, I'd have to go back and see what the code requires. But, again, I think the point that when you're in a club, you've probably had a couple of drinks, there's no clear exit aisles. When you're in a church, you're in a pew. Maybe some communion wine, but you've got your faculties about you. And there's also, hopefully, there's also provisions for disabled folks to get out as well. You know, the exits are clearly marked, and so I think that's a big difference.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. Other testimony?
Lightning has requested to speak.
Oh, well, just in regards to my question, so I see that there is no plan yet to have any offers or discounts, just the implementation of the policy and the code enforcement.
Giving people time to comply.
So if they have to apply for the waiver or the extension, is that at a point where you might consider giving offers? I don't know why that has been in the media.
There's
not everything that you hear in the media is real.
No, well, that's why I'm asking right now. Just
there's no provision here for an extension, is there, Commissioner? It's just
no. I mean, the fire marshal, we do put in the ordinance, the fire marshal has discretion to grant an applicant if they're showing they're making good faith progress to meeting the deadline. Okay. So the fire marshal does have some discretion, but other than that, that's the way it is.
Huh. So there's the appeal process on the...
Yeah, you can appeal to the fire marshal.
Thank you.
Oh, I see. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Hey, my name is Lightning. Mr. Atwood brought up a real good point. Basically, from the tenant to the landlord perspective, looking at it, and I find it interesting on the as-is clause on the leases that he would say the tenants possibly are responsible to putting the system in. Now, one of the concerns I do have is that this very well could interrupt certain businesses, actually close certain businesses, because a lot of tenants are going to throw their arms up and say, there is no way I'm going to pay this expense that the landlord will benefit from in the future. It's not going to happen. So there's going to be some real disputes there that need to really, really be looked at. Another concern I have is just really from a tenant's position is to find some creative financing for these tenants if they do have to bear that cost, and maybe even the PDC enterprise funding, because this is a business that needs to continue to go forward, and maybe there is some low interest financing that could be applied and still get a reasonable interest rate returned on that. Another area that I have some concern with too is watching the videos, which I thought were very effective. I didn't notice anybody reaching for any fire extinguishers to try to put the fire out immediately, and I think that maybe that might be an area to look at also, to make sure that there are adequate extinguishers in various areas, that people are trained to go and grab and try to put these fires out immediately, because some of these systems may not operate quite the way they want to, and I think that might be an area to look at also. And basically, again, maybe the fire chief could explain this. I understand there's two different type of systems, wet systems and dry systems, as far as on the sprinklers. Maybe that can be explained a little bit on that issue, if there is a cost that might save some people money on what direction they can go on those sprinkler systems. And again, Mr. Saltzman, I'd like to commend you on this. This is something that definitely needs to be looked at, and definitely it's a public safety issue, and I hope the landlords and tenants can work together in a effective manner to get this put through, because I think it is necessary. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor, I have a follow-up question. Please. For the chief and
okay.
For Ellen, if I could.
All right. Chief, come on up. Ellen, fire marshal.
Nate, why don't you come on up, too? Yeah.
Chief, based on the testimony, I just have the following question. I don't know what the code provides, but I think Dan is doing something very important here, but we don't want your job to become unduly complicated. And it seems to me the cleanest way to enforce this is against the owner, and then let the owner work it out with any tenant or successor. But as I read it, it says that a person, owner, or occupant can appeal. So as it's currently written, is it streamlined so that you have a clean shot against the owner, and then the owner can figure out cost sharing with a tenant? And the reason I say that is it's sometimes, as you know, harder to figure out who is the lessee, mm-hmm. And the tenant or successor. And it seems to me it's very clear who the owner is.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I think a lot of it is going to be tied up into the contracts between the owner and the lessee, though.
But let me just jump in on that. They can, by contract, and I'm not the lawyer on this case, but by contract, a landlord and tenant can apportion rights and responsibilities and costs. But by code, we certainly have the right to impose an obligation on an owner, and I don't think that's necessarily a delegable duty. And so, Ellen, can't we just be very clear that the owner has the obligation, so that the chief doesn't have to chase down the tenant today or the new tenant tomorrow or whatever and make it harder to comply?
Yes, Commissioner Fish, I think that's right. I mean, you certainly could make that policy choice. I think the intent in listing out all of the people to whom the code applies was to expand rather than narrow the ability of the fire bureau to impose the requirement.
But, I mean, we did get testimony here about, well, you know, my tenants may or may not have gotten adequate notice. With all due respect on this one, I don't think it should be our burden to make sure every tenant or successor in interest gets notice. I think we should give the chief a clean shot to deal with the owner, have the owner, who's the responsible party, take care of the problem, and then apportion the cost with any tenant.
Yeah, I want to reinforce that point. Most commercial leases pass imposed costs from the government on automatically to the tenant. That is, if you own a building and I'm leasing from you and the city requires you to do something, you do it and charge me for it. That's the deal in most commercial leases. So I think focusing on the owner, as Commissioner Fish is suggesting, might be practical.
Well, the other thing, and just to amplify what the mayor said, if the fire marshal spends the first 6 months dealing with the current tenant, and that tenant ends up going out of business or being replaced by another tenant, you could see a situation where there's a bit of a shell game there. Mm-hmm. as opposed to dealing with the owner and making sure the obligation resides with the property owner, which is, I believe, how most of our code is written, that it's the owner has the primary obligation.
And ultimately, the owner benefits from their building being improved. Also for future.
Maybe, it's, I guess it's a question about just making sure, and the intent here, to be clear, is to make the code enforcement as streamlined as possible and not allow changes of tenancy to delay or create hardship claims simply because of a change of tenant.
I think you bring up a good point, Commissioner Fish, and why don't you give us the intervening week here to look at this issue and provide more informed answer and possible change amendment next week.
Yeah, it's a fine point, but it's a valid one. So, other suggestions, questions, concerns? Great, very good presentation. Do you plan to bring this back for second reading next week,
or yeah, do you want to
have
plan.
The opportunity to possibly bring amendments? Or
another? Yeah, and if we need to amend it, then it would require another reading, I guess.
Okay.
Emergency. Oh, yeah. Or we could do it on emergency, perhaps.
Dan, I had one last question, just to be clear. I noticed in your public outreach, which looks quite robust, you met with BOMA, which is the Building Owners and Managers Association. Am I correct in assuming that BOMA is the trade association, if you will, for the 20 nightclubs in question?
No, they are a Building Owners Association, but there's no it's a voluntary membership, so there's no requirement.
It
may not capture everyone.
But it is the group that we deal with often in this council that represent commercial property owners.
Yes. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Great. Well, this will move to second reading. We'll see it again next week. Thank you. We're adjourned. Good job, Dan. Good work.